Summer officially starts in a couple of weeks, and it seems like it's been a long time arriving. With summer too, many people within our faith community go on vacation and do not necessarily attend church. In fact, this is not a guilt trip. In fact, having summer services is a fairly recent phenomenon among Unitarian Universalist churches. And here are some of the reasons UU churches close, according to the booklet, The Church Where People Laugh. Why do we close? Because to everything there is a season, a time to open, and a time to close. Second, it's a revolt against the Calvinist work ethic. Third, Unitarian churches in New England all close down for the summer, and everyone goes to Cape Cod. Only the churches on the Cape stay open. There was some truth to that, actually, historically. The UUs have to close down for 2 months each year just to give the devil a chance to catch up. UU ministers all have summer jobs driving ice cream trucks. Michael Servetus was burned at the stake by Trinitarian Calvinists during the Feast of the Solstice. So each year we honor his memory by closing down for 2 months of mourning. The old Unitarian church calendar is based on the Harvard Divinity School calendar, which of course has only 10 months. And finally, UUs can get out of church for the entire summer because God trusts them. Although the hope is that we support and attend summer services and programs, we do tend to wind down. And so for me this morning, it is a time to reflect upon the past year. Specifically, we need to take time in the context of this space with people who care to acknowledge loss and grief. And loss is, of course, a great equalizer. It touches all people of all ages, of all classes, of all races. In this past week alone, I heard from two of our youth of a major loss. The death of a grandmother in one case, and the death of a friend and mentor in another. Let me approach the subject of lamentation, which Parker and Brock in their work, Saving Paradise, understands to be an essential element of any healthy congregation and faith community. So let me approach it with a beautiful and poignant story from one of my favorite storytellers, Reverend Robert Fulgen. It is rather lengthy, but well worth it. A houseboat on our dock was sold, writes Fulgen, and since we have a no dogs rule, and the new owners had a dog, the possibility of social conflict was high. However, with unexpected care and sensitivity, the couple went from door to door explaining that they understood the rule, but theirs was a very old, very well-behaved dog that did not bark and spent most of the time inside. Besides being old, the dog was not in good health and would probably die soon. They wanted permission to have the dog on the dock for a try and see it reality check. The alternative was to have the dog put away. If the dock tenants voted thumbs down on the dog, then the dog owners would do what had to be done. Now, says Fulgen, I'm afraid of dogs, seriously afraid. Having been chewed up by big dogs twice as a child and having twice gone through the full rabies treatment, I am not enthusiastic about being around dogs. But what am I supposed to say? Too bad, lady, but you'll have to kill your dog. Still, I don't care what they say about their pooch. All dog owners think their dog is an exceptional dog. Ha, I know all canines are hyenas at heart. But I can work around this problem. All I have to do is stay inside for a month and vote no, and the dog is out of my life. So, here comes the dog. Big dog. Half German Shepherd and half Dalmatian. Stout, black and white lady dog. Name is Gida. A name you might expect for a blonde Norwegian bank teller in a bikini on a beach in Spain, but not for a four-legged pet with bad breath. During the trial month, as I was sitting on the deck of my houseboat each morning, she and her mistress would pass me. When the pooch would see me, she would stop, sit down on the dock, cock her head, and look at me. No bark, no whine, no slobber. Just looking. Me, no dog had ever just sat and looked at me like this before. In time, my fear turned to curiosity. What's with this dog? Then curiosity became respect. What's with me? One morning, I reached out and petted her on the head. I know people pet dogs all the time, and it's no big deal, but if you were as afraid of dogs as I was, notice the past tense, then you'd know this was not an incidental moment. She let me pet her. No hand licking, no jumping around and barking, just a solemn acknowledgement of kindness received. With that touch, Gita and I became connected somehow. Much to my wife's astonishment, I even invited Gita over to our house as a personal guest on occasion. We sat together on the porch and watched ducks. My wife wanted to know what was going on, and I didn't want to talk about it. It's embarrassing to be wrong about something, humiliating to have to change my mind. Sometimes I took Gita along on walks. I talked to her. Me, the man who thinks talking to dogs is dumb. Though she never barked or made a sound that I know of, she would stop and sit down and look at me while I talked. I once explained the difference between the music of B.B. King and Chuck Berry to her, and she never took her eyes off of me. Now that's a cool dog. The vote never came up on the dock. Gita took us all in. Everybody had a personal relationship with her. I learned a lot about the power of keeping your mouth shut and your eyes open from that dog. I'll tell you just how far things went. When her owners decided to get married and asked me to perform the wedding, I went along with the idea of Gita somehow being a part of the ceremony. Gita had cancer all this time. Her mistress went to the vet one morning with Gita in her arms and came back alone. And I cried. One Sunday morning in August, 30 of us gathered for a memorial service and told stories that were as much about us as Gita, mostly about the attachments possible between living creatures when they are patient with one another. We buried her ashes under a rhododendron bush that's planted in a barrel on her owner's back porch. I always nod in her direction when I pass by. My seminary training didn't cover how to perform a dog funeral. It takes a real dog to teach that. And when the pupil is ready, the teacher appears. Most of us have had our dog or cat or other animal story. We had our dog Cassie in Vermont and New York. And when she died, it broke my heart. And the major reason I was so reluctant to get another dog, and it was 3 years before we did so, largely because of Sue, not because of me, was because I knew my heart would be broken again. And then we lose people that we love as well. My friend Ronnie Lanier, the Baptist minister who meant so much to me as I grew up, died this past week. For the past 4 months, we were on the phone together almost every night. And after all these years, I kept learning things about her that I never knew. And though her body was riddled with cancer, she always felt that life was a gift and a blessing. I am somewhat comforted by the thought that when I wept on her death day, and even times after that, hundreds and thousands of people who knew Ronnie did the same. We probably have all experienced a variety of losses. So I would like to try to start something new. I would like to suggest that anyone who wishes to come forward and light a candle in silence for a person, an animal, any loss that has affected you deeply. Again, feel free to do this in silence. The candles are down here, and we'll put them in the sand.